Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Ho, ho, ho. Well, it looks like it will be a white Christmas, at least vestigially so, here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicod, Virginia. And by white Christmas, I mean snow on the ground, not in the wishful thinking sort of Megyn Kelly kind of every all historical characters were historically white kind of way. Hi, this is the horn. Here it is, the 24th day of December, 2013. 'Twas the night before Christmas, indeed. Darkness has fallen on the hills and hollers here. Only a faint glow of light pollution to the south and the last westering hints of purple and orange to the west. The sky is clear and brightly cold, and a lone star has risen above the ridge to the southwest of me. A star that I suspect is actually a planet. But I'm not going to follow it. Because, after all, it's a very long way away. This is the very special Christmas Eve edition of The Horn. Ferg is screwing his courage to the sticking place, as Shakespeare put it, noodling around on his guitar and trying to come up with something holiday-esque-ish to play. And the reading from the Book of Luke will be coming, sometime in the third hour, most likely. I'd love to hear about your holiday plans, such as you have of them, if you feel like sharing. Our holiday plan is to get up bright and surly in the morning and jump in the vehicle and drive 90 miles or so to see the rest of the family. Doodle and Margie and Agnes and Laura and Alex and Loney and Jasper and Oz, and do a little cooking over there. And probably come back either tomorrow night or the following morning, depending on how things work out. The weather is supposed to be clear and decent, albeit cold. And it'll be a nice time just to be with family. A lot of traditions out there. A lot of variations on the theme of togetherness and or remembrance of things past. So feel free during the program this evening if you want to talk about what's going on, what's on the menu for tomorrow. Jump right in. I hate to say it, but I'm in kind of a foul mood. My ho-ho-ho got healthcare.gov. I can't make any sense out of this. I mentioned last night that I was successful, with the help of some guy at healthcare.gov on the phone, of putting my application through. And here's what the eligibility notice from the health insurance marketplace says to Agnes and me. Based on the information you provided, the new federal health care law provides that you could be eligible for free or low-cost health care through Medicaid. However, the state of West Virginia has chosen not to offer you this new health care coverage at this time. You are not required to pay a penalty for not having health insurance because of your income and because the state of West Virginia declined to expand Medicaid to cover individuals in your situation. I'm trying to figure out what my situation is. Agnes and me, eligible to purchase health coverage through the marketplace, including catastrophic plans. What the hell did West Virginia not choose to extend? But what part of 138% of the poverty level did West Virginia choose not to participate in? And how did they get to not participate in it? Some Christmas present. I have no idea. So somewhere down here is somewhere down here is you know, what do you do if you think they're wrong? But of course, the other fun part of it is that it took about an hour to finally find this letter. And by the way, the deadline has been extended again for people who were stymied in their attempt to sign up for health care coverage. And presumably prove it, I guess, by having screenshots like the several that I took. But this is it doesn't put you in a very festive mood to find out that you've been screwed by your state. I mean, it was a big deal. West Virginia signed on to the Medicaid expansion. So why isn't it there? And what kind of cheap piece of crap with a God knows what kind of deductible attached to it, are we going to have to purchase? Not to get too terribly grim on a Christmas Eve, but I can see where a lot of people would look at this and say, hey, look, a death sentence. Wow. I hear Hawaii is lovely this time of year. Oh, well. So that's kind of what ickied me up as I prepared for this special Christmas Eve edition of the Horn. Ho, ho, ho. Thanks, Jeremy. Loud and clear on TuneIn. I appreciate that. It's good to know. By the way, just in the way of explaining what will be going on during my absence, we'll start with tonight's rerun, and then I thought I would load up several years' worth of last show before Christmas programs, because, among other things, it serves as a sort of a historical archive, a record, if you will, of hearing our kids as they grew up. several years' worth, as a matter of fact. So we have that. I got to tell you, it's difficult to jump into... Oh, thank you, Sal. Thank you very, very much. Sal just kicked in to get things started for the evening. PayPal button over at headonradionetwork.com. Thanks for the... talked to Boss Man Wayne today. He said thanks for the Christmas cards and the contributions. Much appreciated. Very much appreciated. He enjoys that kind of thing. Not just the contributions, but the cards and letters and things like that that flow in. Oh, let's see. In years past, you know, we've just done some stories, the typical stuff that's happening throughout the world. I checked in just to see what's going on in Bethlehem, and I don't mean Bethlehem, PA, I mean Bethlehem in the occupied West Bank. Story there said that the crowds were big and that residents of Bethlehem were looking to a new year in hopes that finally they would know freedom. Their own independent sovereign state. People in Bethlehem said they'd kind of like to see their Christian population come back in an attempt to coexist in some semblance of harmony, which has been hard to find in centuries past, admittedly. Hell, 2,000 years ago, it wasn't exactly the most peaceful place on earth. And I think along the way, some consideration needs to be given to what it is, and we've talked about this some, what it is that we celebrate this time of year. Some Christians in Chicago decided that emulating their Savior wasn't going to be the best thing in the world for them. So instead they attacked a holiday display put up by some atheists. You know, all faiths, all everybody welcome. So the Christians came along I guess there was like a alphabet, you know, A is for this, B is for that, C is for that, the other thing. Daily Plaza. The atheists had an 8.5 foot tall lighted letter A. A is for atheists. And today, Christians, followers of the Prince of Peace, whose birth they celebrate, attacked the atheist letter A. Yes, Christians attacked a letter of the alphabet. That's how insecure they are in the power of their creator of the universe. They attacked the letter A. They placed a banner over the atheist display saying, A is for angels. The atheist banner had read, well, let's see. It shows constitutional framers Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams. It shows the Statue of Liberty standing or kneeling in adoration of the founding document, the Constitution, adopted December 15, 1791, and the Constitution is lying in a manger. Okay. The banner says, we celebrate the birth of the unconquered sun, the true reason for the season. As Americans, let us all also honor the birth of our Bill of Rights, which reminds us there can be no freedom of religion without having freedom from religion in government. Naturally, a Christian by the name of William Kelly, who chairs something called the Remember America Foundation, said that Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel never should have let the atheists put up a display in the first place. He said, "I think if you actually read the text of the atheist display, it's actually more hate speech." He said, being utterly oblivious to the irony of complaining about hate speech while attacking someone else's display. "It's really not adding anything to the Christmas spirit. It's really not even telling anybody who they really are, what they believe, or what they want for society. They're just saying they don't like Christianity." And he said that the display could be disturbing for families that have children who want to see a Christmas tree or a crash or some sort of nativity scene, but instead find Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and the Constitution lying in a manger. Oh, for heaven's sakes. It's not a war on Christmas, it's a war at Christmas, and the Christians are prosecuting the war. Our buddy Steve just dropped an email along. Subject line, attacking the letter A. Steve says, immediately in my mind turned to the image of the Taliban attacking Buddhist statues in Bamiyan in Afghanistan. Well, fundamentalist Christianity is the American Taliban. Those groups have more in common than they suspect, and if they ever figure it out, we're in real, real trouble, more so than we know now. At the moment, they're locked in a struggle to the death between taste great and less filling, and the normal people are in the middle of it. But yeah, the Christians have attacked the letter A. Godzilla from Wasilla, meanwhile, on this Christmas Eve, has declared that the word anus appears in the Bible. Truly, I wish I was joking, but I'm not, and she did. She said that. I went looking. I had a pretty thorough immersion in Bible as a child and a young man. And it all swirls around the ongoing controversy of that con, that rube job, that game of cultural three-card Monte that surrounds that old bigot from West Monroe, Louisiana. Godzilla from Wasilla admitted she hadn't actually read the article in which he spewed his filthy hate, but she claims that he, in using the word anus, was quoting the Bible. The gospel, not just the Bible. I mean, maybe somewhere in the prophecies of Hubnaktakar, maybe the word's there. But no, Godzilla from Wasilla said the word anus appears in either Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, because she said he was quoting the gospel. Quoting, not paraphrasing, not describing, not manifesting an understanding of it to the best of his abilities and with the lights that their God gave him, but quoting. Oh, for pity's sakes. I'm not going to run the clip. I'm not. So that, at least, is a little bit of a picture of what Christmas Eve is like in 2013. Here in the United States of America. Had a real real smile, though, before things got started. About an hour and a half ago, an email showed up that merely said, subject line, "Greetings from Minsk." Dear Robert, thank you for educating me. Merry Christmas and happy holiday. All the best in upcoming 2014. Signed, Oleg, your loyal listener. In Minsk. Minsk! Isn't that just neat? Do you see that? Is it? Okay, so maybe I can crawl out of my funk a little bit by recognizing what a magnificent and wonderful and brilliant and far-flung family we have. A family that runs from New South Wales into China, through to Japan, across to Hawaii, California, Costa Rica, Canada, all over the United States, all over Canada, crosses the Atlantic to Ireland and England, Scotland and Wales, to Germany, to Sweden, to Norway. Still looking for that first report in from Iceland, because Ferg would very much love to have a real live photograph of the Northern Lights. He's been wanting to see the Northern Lights since he was tiny, and a tiny little fella. And I guess they told him something about it in kindergarten, and it just captured his imagination. So we're still looking for that first listener in Reykjavik. But we've listeners in Crete, in Germany, and Minsk, in Russia. And so this, as I've said before, it's a humbling thing. And it gives a sense of real perspective to know that I have the privilege of sharing conversation with anybody on the face of the planet who finds the program, no matter wheresoever they might be. Hello, Brazil. Hello, India. Yeah. That did. That gave me a real perspective bounce, that note from Oleg. Thank you, Oleg, for reaching out. What else? Where else? How about a little bit of history? Because long before the Christians appropriated this holiday, don't tell them they didn't invent it, I ran across this article from The Guardian by Maeve Kennedy about the celebration of Saturnalia in ancient Rome. Maeve Kennedy, going back to read folks like Seneca and Martial, M-A-R-T-I-A-L, Martial. And the article references that there's a huge digital recreation of ancient Rome due to be published in its entirety in the coming year. And it's going to be really neat when it happens. But in conjunction with that, the creator of the site and the model did a lot of reading. One would have to. So when it comes to Saturnalia, the literature is out there. Martial writes about it. Martial, I mean, come on. In Maeve Kennedy's article in The Guardian, she quotes him saying, "So that you are not ignorant of where I am on sale and don't wander aimlessly through the whole city, I will be your guide and you will be certain. Look for Secundus, the freedman of learned Lucensis, behind the threshold of the Temple of Peace and the Forum of Pallas. He was advertising during the Saturnalia season so that people could go and buy his witticisms. He's a funny guy. Other writers, Seneca being one, wasn't he the one who was tutor to Nero? Seneca was a bit of a grim fellow, I guess. I suppose he was a stoic of sorts. Didn't much care for the season. He said, "It is now the month of December, when the greatest part of the city, meaning Rome, is in a bustle. Loose reins are given to public dissipation. Everywhere you may hear the sound of great preparations." Not a guy to invite to your holiday party, it sounds like. Marshall did go on to write a book of little what Maeve Kennedy describes as little couplets, designed to be given with gifts, arranged as poor gifts and rich gifts. And they even had what Ms. Kennedy refers to as ugly Christmas presents, ugly sweaters. Marshall describes the stout workmanship of a Gallic weaver, which, though of a barbarous country, has a Lacedaemonian name, a thing uncouth but not to be despised in cold December. Clad in this gift, you will laugh at winds and showers, and long before Gore-Tex or Thinsulate. Then there's Pliny the Elder, who wrote, "When I betake myself into this sitting room, I seem to be quite away even from my villa, and I find it delightful to sit there, especially during the Saturnalia, when all the rest of the house rings with the merry riot and shouts of the festival makers, for then I do not interfere with their amusements." Pliny the Elder would go on to die in the eruption of Vesuvius in 79 of the current era. It sounds like he had a pretty good approach to it. Let people have their fun. Don't interfere. Marshall goes on to talk about, among the gifts given, an inlaid citron wood table and a silver statue of Minerva, goddess of learning. Sounds lovely, doesn't it? But this has been going on for a very, very long time, and that is why this particular holiday seems to be infused with such a sense of memory and of place. And that sense of memory and place has been pondered for way past 2,000 years. And we find ourselves in the midst of it yet again. And that's okay. We all have our own memories. Mine is captured. Well, there's a captured image that I was too young to recall, but of a very rare Christmas snow in Alabama. My father returning from the day shift, it would have been about 5 o'clock in the afternoon Central Standard Time. Light fading from the sky. He in a 1962 white white and red, I believe, Dodge station wagon. He's maybe 42 years old at the time. Maybe 41. Maybe 40. Pulling into the driveway of our house, my mother was running the regular 8, not Super 8, regular 8mm film camera. And you see him pulling onto the snow-slicked driveway, pulling down into the carport, and getting out and walking jauntily toward the house. And in years later, when viewing it, at that particular scene, he would say, "Kenneth, go back and turn out the headlights." Because Kenneth hadn't. And my mother was entirely too caught up in her Cecil B. DeMille moment, and she didn't notice that he'd left the lights on either. So in fairly short order, the car had a dead battery. Early footage of me making my father wonder if he had been blessed with the pitcher that he had hoped for, throwing snowballs, both left-handed and right-handed. Charming stuff. A parade, a procession of the children of the family, eldest to youngest. My oldest sister, followed by, and she would have been about 16 at the time, followed by the next youngest, also 16, followed by the third daughter, followed by my brother, who was about 9 years older than me, and then followed by me, crawling into the living room. Charming, just charming. The place gone, and alive only in memory. And that is that's the nature of the immortality of memory. So, yeah, I imagine to one degree or another, during the holiday season, many of us have some sort of memory along those lines. And it isn't limited to Christianity. There are Hindu holidays, Hanukkah we know about. Sometimes Muslim holidays fall at this time of the year. And they are all calls to bear witness to the long procession of family and history. And we do as much honor to that as we do to any religion in this season. So that's kind of where my head is this evening. I guess tomorrow Pope Frank will deliver his Urbe et Orbe sermon. That should be interesting. Might be a little more so than it has in the past. To the city and the world. And big to-dos, like I said before, in Manger Square in Bethlehem. Be kind of nice to see people wearing those little rubber bracelets this time of year with WWJB. What would Jesus buy? Because, you know, I'm sure they think he's a really good consumer. Whoo-wee. But there is news out there that cannot be avoided. Some of which I am desperately trying to avoid. But it is what it is. So here at about 25 minutes before the hour, just as a way of kind of putting a counterpoint on the whole thing, we'll take a little break with what has become for me my favorite contemporary modern holiday song. Tim Minchin. I'll probably close the mic and sniffle a little bit. This is The Horn. Merry Christmas, everybody.
I really like Christmas. It's sentimental, I know, but I just really like it. I am hardly religious. I'd rather break bread with Dawkins than Desmond Tutu, to be honest. And yes, I have all of the usual objections to consumerism, to the commercialization of an ancient religion, to the westernization of a dead Palestinian press ganged into selling PlayStations and beer. But I still really like it. I'm looking forward to Christmas, though I'm not expecting a visit from Jesus. I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mom. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mom. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. I don't go in for ancient wisdom. I don't believe just 'cause ideas are tenacious, it means that they're worthy. I get freaked out by churches. Some of the hymns that they sing have nice chords, but the lyrics are spooky. And yes, I have all of the usual objections to the miseducation of children who in tax-exempt institutions are taught to externalize blame and to feel ashamed and to judge things as plain right or wrong. But I quite like the song. Not expecting big presents. The old combination of sock straps and chocolates is just fine by me. 'Cause I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mom. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. I'll be seeing my dad, my brother and sisters, my gran and my mom. They'll be drinking white wine in the sun. And you, my baby girl, my jet-lagged infant daughter, you'll be handed round the room like a puppy at a primary school. And you won't understand, but you will learn someday that wherever you are and whatever you face, these are the people who make you feel safe in this world. my sweet blue-eyed girl. And if my baby girl, when you're 21 or 31, and Christmas comes around, and you find yourself 9,000 miles from home, you'll know whatever comes. Your brothers and sisters and me and your mom will be waiting for you in the sun whenever you come. Your brothers and sisters, your aunts and your uncles, your grandparents, cousins, and me and your mom will be waiting for you in the sun, drinking white wine in the sun. Darling, when Christmas comes, we'll be waiting for you in the sun, drinking white wine in the sun, waiting for you in the sun, waiting for you. Sentimental, I know.
Yeah, it is sentimental, no doubt about it. But I love that song. Tim mentioned White Wine in the Sun. I love all that about you. Aunts and your uncles, your cousins, your grandma, your mother, and your mom. Gorgeous. A note coming from a place where it is already Christmas, from Robert in Australia. A Merry Christmas and a Happy 2014 to you and all your family and friends, and of course to all the extended Horn family all around the globe. Here in Sydney, New South Wales, it's already 10:30 a.m. on Christmas Day. It's warm but gray and overcast and with a light drizzle. We hope everyone has a safe and happy day. P.S. I did a quick scan of my e-book copy of the King James Version of the Bible, and all it could find was the name Sylvanus. No surprise. You know, the Bible is something that... Godzilla from Wasilla makes up on the fly. And, like I said, there's little to be done save to jump right in on some of this stuff. There's a little town in Alabama called Sims, or should we say Talabama. And Sims, like many other small towns around America, has its own Christmas parade. Fire trucks, marching bands, Santa Claus arriving, candy tossed from floats, that kind of thing. And the Sims civic group that was in charge of putting together the Christmas parade found a dance team from Mobile nearby and invited them to come and perform in the Sims Christmas parade. They were called the Prancing Elite. And, you know, when it comes Christmas time, Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, there's prancing involved, right? I mean, Prancer just screams Christmas. So the Sims parade organizers invited the prancing elite to prance in their Christmas parade. And only when the parade began did people realize who the prancing elite were there in Talibama. One, they were young men of color, all over the age of 21. And they called themselves the prancing elite because, well, prance indeed they do, because they're drag queens. And prance they did. Right through Sims. Meanwhile, there was the Friends of Sims have been removed as organizers of the parade, because that ain't never going to happen in good God-fearing, upstanding, war on Christmas defending Sims, Alabama again, by golly. Claudia Davis was outraged. And she made no bones about it. As she described her outrage to Fox News 10, she said, "I was outraged and appalled. I never expect anything like this at the Sims Christmas Parade. If they were going to put this kind of activity in the parade, they should have notified the people of Sims so that we had a choice whether we wanted our children to attend and see something like that." I saw the video footage. They weren't stripping. They were wearing short little Mrs. Claus kind of red dresses with white trim, and by God, they were prancing real good. But Claudia Davis was outraged and appalled. Jesus, it's like something out of Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar, only with jingle bells and bigots in Sims, Alabama. Now our children that we didn't get to protect from witnessing this abomination, our children's probably going to grow up and be prancing elites themselves, even if they're white. Oh my goodness. Troop Leader Collins, Kentrell Collins, said, "We do want to apologize if we offended anybody who did not know who we were before today, but still, at the end of the day, we only just came to dance, and we did get invited. We told them we were guys. I said, we're all over 21, and we're guys." And the representative of Friends of Sims, Kentrell Collins, said she was so excited. She was like, "I didn't know they had any groups like that in Mobile." So while there has been a full-on manifestation of shock, I tell you, shock, in Sims, Alabama, the Prancing Elite have been booked for New Year's Eve, and I think Mardi Gras, they've been booked in New Orleans and Mobile. So good for them. Good for the Prancing Elite. Jim Bob, what are them?
I think that's the Prancing Elite.
I know, but what?
Well, honey, it looks to me like they're drag queens. Santa and Mrs. Claus drag queens. Oh, mercy. And then there's Casper, Wyoming. Like I said, people celebrate Christmas in a wide variety of different ways. Including Bryant Badger. This past Sunday,
an undercover police officer by the name of Mitch Baker, operating under the pseudonym Paul, irony, reached out to contact Bryant Badger,
on the interweb tubes. After Badger had left his phone number and what are described as graphic propositions, David Edwards writes over at Raw Story, written in a port-a-john at Morad Park in Casper, Wyoming. A high school athletics coach at Natrona County High School saw the proposition written on the port-a-potty wall and contacted the local constabulary. Now, maybe I was wrong about the interweb tubes part, but anyway, Paul, we'll call him Paul, called Badger and said he wanted to do anything. And that's when Bryant Badger said, well, why don't you meet me at the Emporium Adult Video Arcade? I've been there several times and done some sexy time there. So, yeah, they met outside the Emporium Adult Video Store. Bryant Badger and Paul did. Badger invited Baker into the back seat of his SUV and requested that Paul perform oral sex upon him and proceeded to unzip his pants. Of course, the intrepid officers of the local constabulary had everything all mapped out in advance. That's when Paul, we'll call him Paul, changed the radio station to country music, which was the signal for the SWAT team to swoop in before Paul had to come up with a reason for not doing what he had suggested he was willing to do to or for Bryant Badger. Pretty lewd story, isn't it? Pretty lascivious. Oh, did I fail to mention that we're talking about Reverend Bryant Badger? Damn, I left that part out. Buried the lead. How about that? 75-year-old Reverend Bryant Badger has been charged with public indecency, obscene literature, and incitement to a crime. Meanwhile, if Glenn Beck suggests that someone go out and blow the bejesus out of the Tides Foundation, well, he just goes back home to Connecticut. Having been busted, Reverend Badger said that he just has a real high sex drive and he can't control his urges to have sex. Yeah. That, according to a story in the Casper, Wyoming Star Tribune. I just have a high sex drive and I can't control my urge to have sex. It's wrong. And I'll never do it again. It was confirmed, in fact, that Reverend Bryant Badger had, for 25 years, been the pastor at the First Christian Church in Casper, Wyoming. Ho, ho, ho. Never mind. Going to leave that one alone. All kinds of different celebrations of Christmas here in the land of the free and the home of the brave. Over in Washington, D.C., folks were trying to get into the holiday spirit. It was a toy giveaway And Santa was the one who was, you know, giving out the toys because it's Christmas, right? Yeah. Hold on. It was all captured. Got a little sound for you.
Merry. Ah. That's why you shot me. Ah. Something in my back. Yeah. Ah.
You got shot?
Something in my back. My back. Sorry, shot in the throat. Ah. Ah.
Yeah, during the toy giveaway, Santa, a black Santa, remember, Santa is historically white, according to Megyn Kelly, was shot by someone wielding a pellet gun as he tried to give away during a DC toy giveaway. No, really. Now, pellets are different from BBs because pellets are far more ballistic. And in fact, the little lead pellet was still lodged in Santa's back when they took him to the hospital. Because he was taken to the hospital, the toy giveaway had to be completed by someone dressed as the Grinch. Yeah. Really. Question, and this can best be answered, I suppose, by Robert. Randy in PA wants to know, in Australia, does Santa come from the South Pole? Like I said, I'll leave the expertise to Robert, but I'm guessing no. But, you know, he may have to relocate since all the solid icy landmass in the North Pole is pretty much gone. Maybe relocate to McMurdo Station or something. Sergi with a note. Subject line, that pastor. Wow. I can only hope that I still have a high sex drive when I'm 75. He's one lucky fella not to need Big Blue to do so much as make that garden hose trickle. Signed, Sergi, well-aged marbles, Kyle. I just couldn't help it. But, you know, at least he took his business out onto the street instead of, well, you know, wherever so many of the, clerics of the Prince of Peace find their sexual conquests. Many thanks going out to VJ. Thank you, VJ, very much. VJ helping out with this evening's fundraising with a kind contribution of $50. Thank you. And then, oh dear, this. I've been hiding from this story, and we'll just put it in front of a break if I can keep my composure. It's a West Virginia story. And comes from Randolph County, West Virginia, which is more to the north than the east. Very mountainous region. Beautiful region. They're not doing any mountaintop removal up there that I'm aware of. The little town where the story happened is called Quick, West Virginia. I'm sorry. No, not Randolph County. She was... okay. No, this happened down in Kanawha County. Kanawha County is where the state capital is. Most populous county in the state. It happened this past Sunday. in Quick, where a 10-year-old little girl had her universe ended because she and a 9-year-old had gotten hold of one of the family's freedom-protecting shooting guns, a shotgun in this case, to go out and target shoot. Now, please understand, you really can't do much in the way of target shooting with a shotgun, being as how, unless you're using, a slug, things tend to disperse rather rapidly. They were going to helicopter her out, but it turned out that an ambulance was actually faster. What does that say about the nature of communities around here? Not a lot of places to put a helicopter down. But no, they were they she was visiting, and the two kids found the family freedom protector and went out to shoot it. And she got shot in the arm and the chest. Because, well, freedom. Wolverines! The 10-year-old little girl was from Randolph County. She was visiting family in Kanawha County. Sheriff's Department says that they will investigate negligence on the part of the gun owners. But Corporal Brian Humphreys also said that in an accidental shooting like this, neglect is harder to prove when the victim is a 10-year-old as opposed to a toddler. Corporal Humphreys said, at this age, it's pretty much impossible to watch their every move. They are not inherently careless at this age. We're not blaming the parents, but we do urge everyone to make sure that your firearms are secure. Store them in a box that only you know the combination to. And then, waxing somewhat philosophical, Corporal Humphreys said, they were so young. Everyone has learned a hard lesson in safety. A clerk at a nearby convenience store said, everybody around here has just been saying how sad it is. I mean, it's tragic. It's a shock. It's pretty quiet here. I guess in an individual community it is shocking. But nationally, there's no shock to it anymore, is there? Every now and then, the NRAs and gun owners of America, every now and then the butcher's bill comes due, and a 10-year-old pays it by not getting to become an 11-year-old, so that Larry Pratt or Wayne LaPierre can talk more about freedom. So will there be, I don't know. How many stories will there be out of England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland, France, Holland, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Germany, Russia, Italy, Poland? How many stories out of Switzerland? How many stories out of Italy or Spain or Portugal will there be about a 10-year-old little girl who got blown away by a 9-year-old little boy 3 days before Christmas? Australia, Japan, China. How many of those stories will there be? Am I being presumptuous in thinking that that number will probably be zero? But we'll probably have a couple more of these by the time I get back to the microphone, either Thursday or Friday. Because this here country is free, right? And we cherish our freedom. Steve noting under the subject line, gun safety, the safest way to store guns, in a really hot fire whilst melting them down. Funny how these freedom protectors don't, on the one hand, they fetishize the military, but on the other, they don't trust the military to protect them. I guess because, you know, that one in our White House, right? And the government's going to grab all your guns and take away your freedom, and then you won't have the choice of 29 separate breakfast cereals from which to choose on any given day. Freedom. Kind of do wish that Corporal Humphreys hadn't described the slaughter of a 10-year-old little girl as a hard lesson in gun safety. Because there was no lesson. There was no lesson this past Sunday in Kanawha County, West Virginia, than there was a lesson to be learned that was learned by this nation in Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown. There's no lesson in Colorado where a girl died after a school shooting. There's no lesson. Stop with the lessons. Or at least thinking there's one. Stop thinking. The only lesson that ever comes out of any of these stories is that more children will continue to die because of the psychotic fetishism of people like Larry Pratt and Wayne LaPierre. And a little girl whose family will be holding a funeral on Christmas instead of opening packages. Well, that's Wayne LaPierre and the NRA's gift to us at this joyous holiday season. Sure. Take a break. This is Conversation Radio. Progressive in nature, unfiltered and uncensored, listener supported. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. A classic in its own right now, I suppose. Mannheim Steamroller, Christmas. Their electronic version of Deck the Halls. The lines are open this Christmas Eve. Whatever's on your mind, everything is fair game as it ever is. 304-658-3333 is the number. If you want to get through on Skype, you are welcome to do that. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, is how you reach out. And if we're not already friends on Skype, shoot me a contact request, and, well, there you go. I'll approve it, and next thing you know, we'll be conversating. Let's do go to the phone lines, see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
What's happening, Kevin?
Happy holidays.
And the same to you. Season's greetings.
Yep. Well, I didn't get punched for saying that, as one chopper did a week or so back by a bell ringer for Salvation Army. Apparently got punched because I said Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas.
Well, that'll teach him the reason for the season.
Exactly, yeah. So, and the police didn't prosecute, too, by the way, because apparently stores don't have surveillance cameras these days. But they said they couldn't prosecute because they couldn't ascertain that a crime was actually committed. You know, witnesses and cameras and things like that weren't available at all, apparently.
They just.
But I got to disagree with you just a tad on there's no lesson to be gained by these shootings. You may have heard by now that last night here in Colorado Springs, a 14-year-old girl was shot because her father mistook her for a burglar sneaking into the house at 6 a.m. She had decided to sneak out, came back in at 6. The stepfather didn't bother to figure out whether she was a burglar or a child sneaking back into the house, and shot her dead. Not one shot, not two shots, three shots. And so I would say the lesson is that with these gun nuts, they don't care. They don't care who they shoot, what they shoot. They just want the thrill of pulling the trigger. Because you or me, I personally don't have an objection to having a gun for self-defense. But I was taught at a very early age, as probably you were too, that before you pull that trigger, make sure you know what you're shooting at. And in the case of the stepfather here, he had no idea and shot. And he will have to live with that the rest of his life.
But see, that stepfather, I mean, let's try to at least take in the totality of the circumstance. That stepfather has, at some point in time, been whipped into believing that, you know, that his home is in constant peril because someone who doesn't love freedom might come barreling through the... So when tensions are deliberately whipped up that way, well, yep. It's going to happen, right?
Yep. I guarantee you, on what you're saying, I will almost guarantee you he is a Fox News listener, very conservative, because that's the only way you could explain this, because that's a Fox News M.O., that's a Glenn Beck M.O. Fear, fear, fear.
So shoot first and ask questions later, and do it while reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
Exactly. And it, you know, it happening here in Colorado Springs strikes a little bit closer to home because it happened in your city. And I guess it just...
Well, sure. I mean, it's like the convenience store clerk in Quick West, Virginia. And it's pretty quiet around here. We're real shocked by this.
Yep.
Sure, yeah. You're shocked when it's your town... But you're not shocked when it's Columbine or Blacksburg, Virginia, or Newtown, or, you know, fill in the blank. Then we're not so shocked. We're only shocked when it happens close to us. But even when it happens close to us, Kevin, it's still not shocking enough for people to stand up en masse and demand that the headquarters of the National Republican Rifle Association be dismantled brick by brick and that the earth underneath it be plowed and salted.
Yeah, because out here in Colorado, what did they do about a month or so back? They recalled the senators most responsible for passing common sense gun regulations. And they recalled them. And they tried to recall another one. She resigned so there wouldn't have to be a special election. And this kind of mindset will result in more 14-year-olds not getting to be 15-year-olds, as you so often say. Because...
And Larry Pratt and Wayne LaPierre and Ted Nugent can laugh all the way to the bank.
Yeah, and I guess this is what bothers me most. How come it never happens to someone in their family?
Well, because they're all patriotic... patriotic gun. You know what? I bet there's not a damn gun in Wayne LaPierre's house.
Yeah. And if there is, he probably doesn't know how to use it worth a darn anyway.
Well, no. They probably are fairly well trained. They go to the classes and they go to the range. And that's all, I guess that's all well and good. I don't know. But when you leave, you know. When you just casually leave your engines of death lying about, I mean, okay, so Corporal Humphrey says, you know, you can't watch a 9-year-old all the time, and they're going to get into stuff. Well, then the question does become, where did the shotgun come from?
Well, yeah.
And how did the 9-year-old, and this is a stupid question here in Appalachia, Stan, how did the 9-year-old know how to, if it wasn't loaded, find the shells and load the shotgun? Although my money says that it was probably already loaded.
Yeah.
And most 9-year-old boys in this state know how to rack a round into the chamber of a shotgun. Or maybe it was if it's a pump action, or maybe it's just a double barrel and they're already in there. Or maybe it's a semi-automatic and you just pull the lever and go.
Well, I'm betting that maybe even the shotgun was already cocked and ready to go, you know? I mean, that's the way these people think. And it's just scary to me to think that you've got teenagers in your house and you have this mindset. Because teenagers are going to be teenagers. They're going to do stupid things like sneak out in the middle of the night. And I know when I was a kid, I locked myself out of the house a couple of times, and my dad was a pretty sound sleeper. So, you know, did my dad shoot me? No, because my dad had enough common sense to know that, you know, you might want to see who it is before you actually pull the trigger. And yet some of these people just don't think about it, and then the fact it happened 3 days before Christmas... You know, what will Christmas be like for these people for the survivors of their life?
Even the word survivor turns to ashes in your mouth when you consider a story like this, Kevin.
Oh, yeah, because in my opinion, this father needs to be charged with at least manslaughter, and I think there's a good case to be made for criminally negligent homicide, if not outright murder, because you can quote that stand your ground all you want, but when you didn't take time to ascertain whether the threat was real or imagined or not there at all, then how can you form a stand your ground defense?
Well, there you go.
That's what's so silly about it. And they haven't charged this man yet. And probably won't, knowing the city I live in. But, you know, and again, that goes back to what you said. No matter who the person is, we don't stand up in mass and protest this insanity. And, you know, you see the question as a hashtag on Twitter, what will it take? And I don't know that there isn't anything that it would take, short of nuclear annihilation by gun, so to speak. But that's what we have.
I can't think of anything that could possibly happen in the United States, God forgive me, or Flying Spaghetti Monster, or anybody else for that matter. I can't think of anything that could happen in this country that would make this country finally come to its senses about firearms. Dear God, I mean, Columbine didn't.
Nope.
Sandy Hook, Newtown. If that doesn't, nothing will. So that's a guarantee that it's going to happen again and again and again and again and again and again and again. And it's not going to happen because crazy. It's going to happen because guns.
Yep. And it's going to happen because of inaction and the money that's passed from places like the NRA to our politicians to not do anything. And then to sheriffs like Sheriff Joe down in Arizona and this sheriff we've got, although it's not his jurisdiction this time, but, you know, they're very pro-gun. And so when something like this happens, it's almost a guarantee that no one's going to be charged. It's just going to be, well, we didn't know, you know, we're kids will be kids. The 9-year-old just, you know, he got into something he shouldn't have, but it was an accident. And I can remember a time down in Florida 20, 30 years ago where if your kid got into a gun like that 9-year-old did, you were charged for being negligent and allowing that kid to get into the gun. It was the responsibility of the adult. Now we just say it's a kid and it's an accident. And I find that very sad. So...
Well, but, it is, it's a horror. It's an agony.
So, but on a lighter note, I want to wish everybody a happy holiday, Merry Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, et cetera, et cetera. And especially our friend Bill. I don't know if he's listening tonight, but my thoughts go out to him as he continues to recover. And you know, I guess the only thing I'd leave the Horn family with, which they already do this, but you know, try to treat others with respect and not live in fear.
Yeah.
Because if you're not living in fear all the time, these kind of things won't happen to you. And I know the Horn family knows that, but on the chance that the stray neoconservative might be happening to listen in.
Ah, the stray, you mean the random lurking freedom protector?
Right, yep, yep. And so, aside from my thoughts about this holiday, I hate this season. With the passion, because of commercialization. I went shopping today, mostly for food, and I had to go because I'm not having anybody come in tomorrow, and so I'm kind of on my own, and I want snacks. It's Christmas. I'll watch a football game, that kind of thing. But just the hassle of everything this time of year drives me crazy. I don't mind the Christmas holiday. What I do mind is the commercialization of everything. And the only thing I'll say that I didn't notice at 2 o'clock in the afternoon the day before Christmas, I didn't notice a mad rush of people like normal. I mean, it was busy, but it wasn't super busy.
Yeah, we weren't doing any. I mean, there has been precisely zero Christmas shopping here.
Right.
You know, there will be no Christmas gifts in this family. But there will be we'll carry on the tradition that has obtained here for over 100 years now of frying oysters on Christmas morning. So, you know, we went to the grocery store, and it wasn't crazy. It wasn't chaotic. I ran across a couple of people who were apparently new to shopping carts, but that could happen on any given day at Kroger.
Right, exactly.
But the roads were quiet. That is one of the nicer things about Christmas. Of course, our local Rippy Mart will be open tomorrow. There's a lot of places that are going to be open, and I'm certainly no fan of blue laws or anything like that. But there is something special, I guess is the way to put it, in having a time when everything isn't just constantly in some form of chaos. I mean, there is a stillness out there, at least, you know, where I am. And I don't want to choose the wrong word or overestimate, but it's kind of awesome, Kevin.
Yeah.
You know, when it's nothing but, you know, the constant roar and rumble, to have everything go quiet.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Well, you know, unless it's police, fire, hospital, those things have got to stay open. But the Rippy Mart doesn't need to be open tomorrow.
Well, somebody's going to forget batteries.
Oh, yeah. But realistically, that could wait till the day after Christmas.
Have you ever seen a child cry because the thing doesn't work because daddy forgot the batteries? That's not a place you want to be living, Kevin. I'm not kidding.
No, but, you know, it does go back to what you're saying, though. And I actually kind of am a little bit jealous because your family has chosen not to spend anything on Christmas gifts.
Well, I don't know that it was a choice.
Well, no, but there's a certain sense of freedom that comes with that choice because you can enjoy the season for which it was intended. I firmly maintain that the holidays like Thanksgiving and Christmas are meant to be family holidays, and that worry about what am I going to get so-and-so because they're going to get me such-and-such is gone. And so you can focus on the family. Pardon me. So you can focus in on the family, not focus on the family. I don't want to give Jim what's his name too much credit here, but seriously, you know, I tried to do that for years. My parents grew up without being able to share Christmas because of religion. So they've always cherished that, but especially in the last 30 years, I've come to hate it, just for the commercialization. And, you know, I don't mind giving gifts to somebody, but I don't want to turn it into a, I've got to get you this gift because you gave me that gift kind of thing. I don't know if that makes sense. But
no, that icky sense of obligation.
Right, exactly. And I would much rather give someone a gift out of them not expecting me to give them a gift, and therefore I'm not going to get one back. You don't want, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I'd rather spend... This year I didn't go home, and I'm glad I didn't because of various things that have happened. But even though I may spend tomorrow with myself, there's still a sense of family there of just enjoying the holiday for the holiday. And when I do go home to Florida sometime in the near future here, it'll be about family. It won't be about rushing around getting gifts for one another. And so I'm probably doing a really bad job of describing that. But
no, I don't know. You're not doing a bad job at all.
I find it really freeing. And whether it's because of financial or not that you're not doing that, I will almost guarantee you that 20 years from now, your kids are going to cherish this kind of Christmas over one that you shared gifts on. I will almost guarantee it. And so maybe if the horn's still on the air 20 years from now, we can ask them. But, you know, I just find that, you know, especially the oysters on Christmas morning, you know, I don't know where that started.
I can explain where it comes from here, and it's kind of touching. December, well, back, you know, 100 years ago, if it didn't come by rail, it didn't come.
Yep.
There's no semis, and there's no interstate highway system, and there's no air transport. You know, you can get a, you know, in 2013, you can get a lobster in Las Vegas that was in the increasingly warmer waters of the Atlantic Ocean off Maine 8 hours before.
Yep.
Because we're willing to pump enough carbon into the Earth's increasingly heating system to take lobsters from Maine to Las Vegas.
Yep.
And so, you know, you can do that. But when my grandfather was a very young man, the only time that you could get oysters here were, A, in very cold weather, when they would last, having been harvested on the East Coast. And, you know, there was that old maxim about you never eat oysters in a month that doesn't have an R in it. Well, December's got an R in it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, May, June, July, and August are supposedly the down times. Those are the months that don't have ours. But it was cold enough to ship them by train, and they came in barrels. And for a coal miner who was working for slave labor wages, it would be about maybe the only time a year when he might have enough money to buy some. And it was a huge treat, of course. But, you know, some of the old poverty and depression era traditions were carried over all the way to my childhood. We didn't have a fireplace or a chimney in our house when I was a child, so they were just kind of, the stockings were hung on the wall, and they were filled with the same thing that my mother and father's stockings were filled with. They were filled with oranges and nuts and peppermint candy. Not, you know, $500 electronic gym cracks. You know, maybe some sort of small toy. Now, I mean, there was plenty of stuff under the tree, but the stocking tradition remained that way.
Yep.
And it was a day for sitting. And again, I guess things that were seasonally brought onto the market only for that time of year, and it was the only time of year that you got them. And it made it really, really special. You know, fruitcake, as much of a butt of a joke as it often is fruitcake because it was made with preserved fruit and soaked in liquor so as to preserve it. And that's why it's so damn dense.
Yep.
You know, there are fruitcakes you can use for a doorstop. And some of those candied fruits are just disgusting. If you ever get hold of a real fruit cake made with real preserved fruit, it's an entirely different animal.
Oh yes. I was lucky enough to get 4 tins of cakes this year, 3 of which were fruit cake from my mother. And I love real fruit cake, not store bought stuff.
Yeah, that Claxton stuff that comes in a striped cardboard box.
Oh my God! Yeah.
You know, I'll just put it. I'll put it on the fire next to the Duraflame log.
Yep.
And it'll burn hotter, brighter, and longer.
Well, there you go. I have the fuse. So, you and Bill were talking about something yesterday, and I can't remember what it was, but it was something to do with Bill was talking about something that you all. Do you remember that conversation?
I got to have a little more detail than that, Kevin.
I know. I'm trying to think. I had it in my mind 10 minutes ago, and I can't think of it now. One of those senior moments where you know exactly what you're going to say 10 minutes ago, and now I can't think of it. It was something to do with music, but I can't think of it now. I was hoping maybe you'd have an idea of what I was talking about. It was something very specific you all were talking about in the conversation yesterday, but I totally lost what the word was I had in my mind.
If anything comes to me, I'll shoot you a note or something.
Yeah, because I missed it. What the beginning of the conversation was, and caught where Bill said something to you about it, and then, but I can't think of the conversation at all right now. So, which is a guarantee that I'll think of it 5 minutes after I hang up the phone.
That's generally how it works.
Exactly. So. I was just hoping.
Well, if you do, shoot me an email, and I'll do my best.
Yep. And one other thing before you go, you were talking about you being off. You're talking about tomorrow you were going to do the replays of the day before Christmas.
Yeah, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, and tonight will be 5. 5 years of that lined up in the rerun stream.
Good, good.
So that's 15 hours. I could go back and get more, but that's what I have the local archive for, and I get a little confused rooting around in Ben's deep archive of the horn, frankly.
Oh, that would be. Ferg would be 13 then at the beginning of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it goes back to.
People would be 12, so.
Yeah, it goes back to 2009.
Wow. Well.
And there are older ones. There are older ones that are precious, too. But, like I said, they're kind of hard to find.
Yep. Well, I think. Thankfully, we do have the Ben Birch archives to go wandering back. Way, way back in the Wayback Machine, if we so choose. So, I know it's kind of difficult for me to maze through there from time to time, but I did hear one of your real older, much older shows one time, and I just
it's a really different experience way back when.
Well, yeah, you know, because I can remember. Obviously, I don't have. Your show to do that with, but years ago, Malloy was on one of our local stations, and I kept hearing this guy rant about the Bush crime family, and I never could pick him up well because it was late at night, and that station was up in Denver, and I knew Mike Malloy before. I knew who he was, but I didn't make the connection that this was the same Mike Malloy. I just heard this guy ranting about the Bush crime family.
And I remain a fan. So Ferg and I will be sitting back here and listening to the very special Christmas Eve edition of the Malloy Show this evening. And it's always fun to have because you can wind up with two shows on at the same time. I got Malloy going on one computer, and I got Rick Smith going on the other. It can get a little zany.
Yeah, I haven't mastered that art of trying to listen with two ears on different shows. I try, and being blind, almost out of necessity do I try. But it is rather interesting because they each bring their different perspective to things. And I know the other day I was catching Rick Smith's show where he was talking about doing a tour of the country.
Yeah.
And I came in about 3 minutes late, so I didn't know whether the show was live or not. But it was interesting because I kind of think that's what we need more of is...
going around and hearing from folks on the ground?
Yeah, but not just the Rick Smiths of the world, and not just they need to do it the Rick Smith way, I guess is what I'm saying. Politicians need to do it like Rick Smith is doing it. You're not bringing your agenda to the table. You're wanting to hear what folks are saying.
Yeah, it's the real definition of a so-called listening tour.
Right, exactly. And that's what I found so interesting about Rick's tour, and I didn't catch what cities he was in, but, you know, kind of wondering how close is he going to come to Colorado, and just for that aspect, but I didn't even know if the show was live, so, and I'll admit, I'm more of a, because Rick's show is more of a local show, I tend to listen to Malloy much more, but my dad was, at one time, very much pro-union, and that carries on to me and still does. And so I listen to Rick Smith with a very open ear because America needs to listen to Rick Smith with an open ear. Unions are what made it possible for people to ascend into the middle class, and the lack of unions is what's causing this decline back into poverty. And so, yeah, we need more Rick Smiths. We need more Bob Kincaids, because your show brings the conversational radio aspect to it. And then we need the Mike Malloys, because we need that person who's willing to stand up and just scream into the microphone at times. So, you know, I don't find that with too many other progressive show hosts, whether it's whoever it is. I mean, there's more than just you, Malloy, and Rick Smith out there, but I don't find the activism in some of the other talk show hosts. And the bottom line, I guess that's what all three of you are, Rick, you, and Mike. You're more activist in the long run, and not concerned about making a profit so much as getting the message out there. Profit would be nice, you know, but it's getting the message. And so, anyway, just a few random thoughts, but I'm hoping that 2014 will turn out to be much better. And, wanted to ask you, are you going to do a Moron of the Year award this year?
You know, I don't do any of that year-end stuff.
I know,
How would you ever begin to winnow them out?
Exactly.
I mean, I guess the closest we ever come is retiring people. For instance, Godzilla from Wasilla can no longer be our winner of Moran Monday. She's just she's in the Moran Hall of Fame. We have retired her dunce cap.
Yeah. Well, wasn't that kind of? I mean, I know what you're saying, but wasn't that kind of done in 2008 when she first opened her mouth?
You can make that argument.
If she just made sat there and looked pretty during the campaign of 08 and not said a word, there's at least an even chance that John McCain would have been our president, not Barack Obama.
Oh, perish the thought.
Once Sarah Palin opened her mouth, it was all over. You know, so. But, yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking about that last night. How would you even begin to say there's Moron of the Year? There's so many.
Right.
You have to make it an organizational one, like
so many morons, so few floppy shoes.
Yeah. Yep. Well, anyway, it's just, I'm hoping 2014 goes much better. I got to admit that I'm cynical, but there's always hope, and I hope I never lose the zeal for getting the message out. I do acknowledge there's times where I just want to throw my hands up in disgust. But if we do that, aren't we kind of, wouldn't that be kind of like
surrendering?
Yeah, but I'm thinking more of the Germans when they let Hitler take control. Because there were people that did that.
Oh, capitulation.
Right, capitulation. That's the word. And there's times I want to do that, but I know what the... If we ever did that, you don't even want to think about what would happen. And so, you know.
Yeah.
I am planning. I got to take a break. I am planning to have a little fun within the next month or so and just kind of recharge my batteries because there just has to be a point at which you do have to take a rest from it, though. And my activism goes beyond just politics. It goes into the disability community, that kind of thing, too. So, you know, I'm kind of thinking something... Just getting away from everything doesn't hurt, but you can't completely surrender. You just go and recharge your batteries and come back. But the only thing we can do is just go onward.
Well, look, yeah, it's like being halfway up the face of a vertical mountain. Climb or die. Can't climb back down. Can't stay where you are. Got to climb.
Yep.
By the way, we've had a suggestion for how we refer to people like Godzilla from Wasilla. Moran Emerita. That's impressive, isn't it? Thank you, Steve, for that. You like that, Kevin?
Yeah, actually I kind of do. That kind of describes Sarah Palin pretty well. Moran Emerita, Sarah Palin. I think there's a couple other people that would qualify for that, too, though.
Well, Louis Gohmert.
Louis Gohmert.
Steve King.
Yeah. But...
I think de facto, I have retired Phil Robertson.
Yeah, but I think you retired Phil Robertson because that's such a non-story story. Or a...
Yeah, it's a con. It's a hustle.
It's a con, right. When you were talking about that last night, I thought that makes a lot more sense than just that A&E decided to dump him. This was a con. I was listening to a biography today of how the baseball players threw the 1919 World Series, and there were a lot of things between that and this thing with Phil Robertson. There was collusion. There was collusion in this A&E thing, and there was collusion in throwing the 1919 World Series. But how many people have even thought of that? How many people have thought of the fact that what was Phil Robertson doing getting interviewed by GQ magazine?
Precisely my point. This stuff was this interview was probably set up and conducted somewhere in time, roughly equivalent to the ginned-up controversy about how how was it phrased? Liberals want to remove the Robertson's prayer from the end of Duke Dynasty. That was a couple of months ago. I was reading that,
yep.
And that would be contemporaneous with the interview and with the storyboarding and the setup and the decision, editorial decision. You know what GQ needs? I mean. I used to read GQ. I used to read Esquire.
Yep.
Things like, you know, in my Halcyon salad days, dressing well and gadgets I couldn't afford but were fun to look at mattered to me.
Right.
But really, is it the novelty value of, hey everybody, look, a redneck? To put him in GQ? Because, again, I can't reinforce this enough. Those stories are placed. There are people whose job is to get people to interview people like Duck Doofus.
Right.
Meanwhile, down at the Rippy Mart, which will be open at 10 a.m. tomorrow, down at the Rippy Mart, they've got an entire little display case full of Duck Dynasty bobbleheads featuring Phil and Cy and Ma Robertson. No, really, bobbleheads. And they got Duck Dynasty cups and I mean, at the Rippy Mart.
Yep.
These people are laughing all the way to the bank.
Exactly.
Praise Jesus.
Yep. Yep. And when you start with that first question, what was he doing getting interviewed in GQ, you then have to realize that that's what it was all about. Because if you can't answer logically, what was he doing getting interviewed by GQ?
Oh, for heaven's sakes, and there's more, Kevin. See, we're being sucked in again. Kevin, there's more to that interview than just what he, the odious crap that he said about gay folks and the odious crap he said about the happy days of the old South, the old Jim Crow South, when people weren't singing the blues, and you know, happy dark skinned people out there chopping cotton. Jesus, no, he goes on, because I read it, so you don't have to. He goes on to talk about the fact that Pearl Harbor was caused because Japan wasn't a Christian nation.
Yep. Yep.
Sheesh.
Yep. That's the challenge I see for the late.
I mean, he blamed Pearl Harbor on Shintoism.
Right. Like I heard someone today talking about how it was actually a compilation of Fox quotes, but they were talking about how the wussification of the United States. And one of the things they gave was the fact that kids were being taught yoga in school.
Oh, that's always a good one. Yeah. Because that's demonic. I mean, I've been in churches where they describe yoga and even meditation as demonism.
Well, you may not believe in it, but I was listening to
this. I mean, there were entire sermons devoted, Kevin, to not reading the horoscope in the newspaper, because that was a way of letting demons into your life.
Right.
And never getting near a Ouija board.
Sure, because you're opening a portal to the dark side.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I just have to wonder sometimes, what must it be like for international listeners to the Horn to hear something like that? And really, that's America? Yes, that's a big chunk of America.
Well,
I mean, is the rest of the world just looking at us, shaking their heads, going, "Them people's crazy"?
Well,
because whole bunch of us are. I mean, just stone cold nuts.
Yeah, they are, because one of these UFO people was talking about the fact that, whether you believe it or not, in the fact that it's extraterrestrials, he was saying that he had been preached against in sermons in church, saying that he was opening doors to demons because of his alleged contact with UFOs. And I thought to myself, and you wonder why, if there is aliens out there, they haven't made themselves known? Because the first alien sets foot on American soil,
I'm out of here.
Seeing a demon.
Yeah, never mind Klaatu, Barada, Nictu. Light the fuse and leave.
Exactly. And if people in the 21st century still believe that crap, you know, I mean, America likes to think of herself as enlightened. We're nowhere close to it. Because if we still have guys like this idiot from Duck Dynasty that control our popular culture, we're pretty much screwed. There's nothing wrong with faith. There's nothing wrong with your personal religion. But when it starts to go into the fact that yoga is a way of allowing the devil into your life, there's that's kind of time that you need to.
I love the fact that fundies will declare who what is and is not a devil or a demon, when in fact, you know, with things like yoga and meditation, these things were invented within a culture who invented religion, period.
Oh yeah.
At least on a broad cultural basis, because, you know, things like the Harappan civilization, Mohenjo-Daro, the so-called Aryan migration down into India, the Rig Vedas, the Bhagavad, oh my God, never mind, the Mahabharata, and this stuff is contemporaneous. For instance, the Mahabharata and Homer are pretty much contemporaneous.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that they've got a similar subject matter. You get the idea that there were things taking place on the planet that were turning out similarly in wildly divergent contexts.
Yep. Yep.
Mr. Gibson in the chat room noting, to the people of the lie, there is no history. It is a blank page to be written upon by false teachers and other opportunists. There you go. Exactly. Exactly. Hey, Kevin, I'm going to roll on. I hope you have a wonderful holiday tomorrow. As I said before, I don't know if I'm back on Thursday or Friday, or maybe not back either day. It all depends on how some things transpire. Ferg's birthday, he likes to, you know, he wants to go out and do something, and maybe we'll go see The Hobbit or something like that.
Well, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to Ferg, and Happy Birthday as well.
18, man, 18.
Ooh, legal. Sort of legal, anyway, depending on... Is it 18 now in your state?
Well, he's eligible to vote. He's liable for any criminal conduct as an adult that he commits. Not saying that he's going to. I mean, that's just part of the talk, you know. Hey, you know, you don't get a pass anymore.
Nope.
And this is a brutal, brutal place. The whole country is a brutal, brutal place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, except in certain pockets, Kevin. I'm looking at a story right here. You remember the story out of Alabama about the guy who got convicted of rape and the judge gave him a walk?
Yep.
Well, the appeals court, the district attorney appealed it. The appeals court sent it back down to the judge and said, no, you screwed up. You got to resentence this guy. So the judge resentenced him and gave him a walk again. Now, this is a guy who raped a teenage girl of 13 years of age over a period of time and was convicted on one count of first-degree rape and two counts of second-degree rape this past September.
Yep.
Well, he's gotten probation again.
Yep.
But from the same judge.
And it shouldn't have even gone back to the same judge.
Well, you know, the judge has to do it. Because it was sent back down to his court for him to remedy his error.
But if he doesn't remedy the error, and of course this is the judge's, from the judge's point of view, what he did by doing that probation again, he's counting on the DA not appealing it again.
Well, the DA is.
Yeah. I hope he is. Because it's just so unfair. I mean, not even one time is not anything that you should get probation for. But you could make the argument if it's a one-time thing, you know, you could at least say, well, it was only the first time or whatever, but this is over a period of time to a child.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you even think about probation of any kind?
Yeah, that's just, exactly.
I don't know if you caught the story out of Texas yesterday about the girl who was raped in the band room of her local high school.
And was charged with a crime herself for getting raped.
Exactly.
She was suspended from school for public lewdness.
Right. So.
Henderson High School, somewhere in East Texas, December 6, 2010.
Yep.
She reported that she had been raped in the band room, and reported the crime to the assistant band director. He told her to work it out with the boy. She said, I didn't know what to think. I was 17. So the assistant vice principal heard of it. And the high school said, no, this was consensual sex. The cops said there'd be no criminal charges.
Yeah, well, that's
and then they suspended her from school.
Right, and sent her to a alternative school with the rapist.
And see, this check this out. Here is a prime example of exactly what happens when these godforsaken right-wing pieces of walking, talking pieces of crap inject their hateful ideology into the body politic. This is a quote. Let's see. I'm trying to find... I had it here just as... Oh, there it is. Jimerson added that Bradshaw Bean had used language that, quote, implied consensual sex instead of forcible rape. Remember the forcible rape discussion, Kevin?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so now he has to, I don't know, work her over with a tire iron? Forcible rape, please.
Yeah, and there's another good thing on AATTP. It's something like the top 10 Bible quotes the right wing chooses to ignore.
Yeah, I read that the other day.
Unfortunately, they'll still choose to ignore them. But I thought it was a good exercise in giving these right wingers a little insight into the guy from Nazareth's words they supposedly believe, into what he actually said and what they say he said. But on that note, I'll let you get on to someone else, Bob, but thank you very much for the conversation.
Oh, my pleasure, Kevin. My pleasure. Have a wonderful evening.
You too.
Bye now. Okay. Calling from Colorado Springs, that's our buddy Kevin. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How you doing?
I'm well, Jim. How are you?
Pretty good. Baking.
Baking?
Mm-hmm.
Mm, what's in the oven?
Oil bread. Have you ever tried that?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, it's pretty simple. It's buttermilk, canola oil, and flour, and diced up cheddar cheese, sharp cheddar cheese, and chives.
Well, I'm hungry.
It's good. It really is. Loaf just came out and slid right out of the pan like you wouldn't believe.
And you used your oven, not some sort of bread machine, I trust.
Yeah. I mean, I have a bread machine. I haven't used a thing in years.
I used to make a lot of bread around here when the kids were younger.
Yeah,
and people would say, why don't you get a bread machine? I said, I've got one. My hands and that oven.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. It's great to set, you know, that thing on the night before, so, you know, it could go through its machinations, and then, you know, the timer would kick in, and it would fill the house with a lot of lovely odors.
Oh, it's perfume. Absolutely perfume.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, what's for dinner and for Christmas?
Don't really know. We're gonna do the oyster thing in the morning, but beyond that, I don't have any answers because I'm not in charge.
Who's doing the oyster thing?
That I'm doing. We'll be Ferg and I will get up and out of here and head over to see the kids and the grandbabies and everything early in the morning, and the minute we get there, we'll start frying oysters.
Oh, okay. So that's right. You're going to be on the road tomorrow. Well, safe journey and all that.
Thank you.
There's a lot of snow around here. I mean, we got a lot more snow than they thought. We received a lot more snow than they ever anticipated.
But it looks like it's going to be, everything points toward it being perfectly clear tomorrow, so that's a good thing. And I'm not going to take any of the creepy back roads anyway. You know, you can, I'm going freeway as much as I possibly can.
Oh, boy. Well, they're fun, too.
Yeah, but at least the Department of Highways tends to
clear those off.
Yeah.
Well, maybe there won't be as many coal trucks on the road as far as they normally.
Well, I will have to go down U.S. 60. I'll have to go down Golly Mountain and all of that, so.
Oh, boy, you do have a gyro in front of you.
But tomorrow being Christmas, at least there won't be a bunch of godforsaken coal trucks barreling behind and before me.
No, that's true. Thank God for that.
Yeah.
I just was listening to your last caller and all this stuff about Duckman. Well, what can you say? He's back on A&E. Haven't watched him. I just searched Channel Surf and saw that he was back on there either last night or night before last. And I thought to myself, oh, hell, is that ZZ Top? And I said, no, God, it's that idiot from Louisiana. I think ZZ Top put out a lot more interesting stuff than he ever did, in my personal opinion, you know?
Right, partial to ZZ Top.
Yeah, that's it.
Waiting for the bus. Jesus just left Chicago.
Yeah, I haven't listened to him in a long, long time. But nonetheless, I still remember his rather spectacular appearance. I thought to myself, good Lord, is Popcorn Sutton still around? I'm sure he has a good recipe for shine.
Oh, there are some good ones out there.
Well, I'm sure this guy, probably Duckman, probably has a big still somewhere in the.
Oh life. No, he's an upstanding fella now. Let's not be casting aspersions on his asparagus.
Oh well, if you want, I will. I'm sure those people like him and you know that type thing, in which. I'm not going to give him any more attention. Because I think he's been given too much attention, you know, as is Comilfo, you know, absolutely.
Right.
And so the hell of him, and he can say what he wants to say. I mean, you know, hey, I don't like what the guy says. A lot of people would like what Larry Flint said too, but I mean, you know, in the case versus Larry Flint, guess what?
Yeah, then again, nobody's gone and put a bullet through Phil Robertson and sentenced him to a wheelchair for the rest of his life.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, that's what I was just talking about. His right to say things what he says, even though I don't like them. I mean, you know, that's what he says. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that with stupidity having a habit to get its way, a lot of people will probably concur and support, including Jindal or whatever his name is, the governor of Louisiana, and a lot of these crazy people that are given too much attention. The thing about it is, when they get up and they start shooting their mouths off, hey, somebody's going to make some money out of that, man. Big time.
Oh, it's a great racket.
Sells big time, yeah. And the fact that GQ, of all magazines, would want to interview him, God.
You get my meaning.
Oh, shit. I mean, excuse me, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Christmas Eve. But nonetheless, I used to subscribe to GQ and look at all the clothes and stuff like that and what was the latest thing. As far as sartorial elegance is concerned, and you got him on there? Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I just can't make that work in my own head.
I remember the first issue of George had George Wallace on there, but at least Wallace was contrite and basically had admitted to the fact that he had done some things that were wrong and said some things that were wrong. And being interviewed by John F. Kennedy Jr. back in the 90s when that magazine was first launched, that even Wallace, confined to a wheelchair, had realized that he had done a number of things and said a number of things that were wrong and basically tried to come clean as best he could.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, never agreed with a whole lot of what Governor Wallace said. God, when he ran for president, had Curtis LeMay as his running mate, I thought to myself, Lord, here we come.
Dill Harris, do Jesus.
I don't know, but Bomber LeMay, I mean, you know, God Almighty, thank God he didn't get his way.
Yeah, and I guess that was going to be the message George was sending to Washington.
I would think so, but nonetheless, I'm certainly glad, because he was a member of Kennedy's ex-con committee, and he was the one who wanted to go to war right away and just blow the hell out of Cuba and, you know, damn the torpedoes and full speed ahead.
Yeah.
Of course, I mean, you know, now General LeMay, being what he was in the time of World War II,
Well, you know, he
did the best he could in his own strange way.
He was sort of an heir, a philosophical heir, to Billy Mitchell.
Right, he was, absolutely. Air power.
Billy Mitchell tested his theory of air superiority by suggesting to the president that it would be really cool to drop some bombs on striking miners in West Virginia.
Well, that was another story, and Billy Mitchell, of course, was the precursor of and proponent of Duhay, Trenchard, and a number of other, theorists who were the precursors of modern war, and that was the use of air power. That's just the way it was.
Yeah.
Sorry they had to do it on people at Blair Mountain, but nonetheless, that was a very novel idea at the time, and it proved very well. It proved very well in eliminating a lot of bad people who had some bad ideas.
Indeed.
I mean, that's just war. War is hell. And unfortunately, the advent of the modern airplane and everything like that as a means of transportation and as a means of doing a lot of other great things, excuse me, it has its darker side.
Indeed. Indeed it does.
The only thing one can say, excuse me, about that.
So, are you doing any other cooking for tomorrow, Jim?
It's all in the oven. Just a big hen, and let's see, broccoli casserole. That's my specialty.
Oh, really? Is it broccoli and rice?
No, I don't use rice. Don't use it. I just basically take broccoli and some other ingredients and whip them up. And what I like to do with it is to use elements for the crust and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
So it's, not just broccoli and rice, because the rice I do separately. I use the wild rice. And it has a unique contribution of its own.
Oh yeah, I mean it's not even rice per se, but Lord, I love that stuff. The last of my stash that I brought home from Wisconsin, I'm taking with me tomorrow.
Oh, that's good. So I trust that you guys are going to have a good Christmas dinner.
More than anything, we will be together, and that will make it the loveliest part of all.
Well, Bob, that's what Christmas is about. It's not about who is giving what to whom. The next day will be either taken back or, in days to come, a difficult thing. thing in which to pay for, and you know, people, you know, that's the thing about these plethora of gifts that are underneath the tree. I mean, they look very pretty beneath the tree, but I mean, a lot of people spend money they don't have, and they spend it the wrong way, and half the gifts that people are given or either they don't want, or they're going to take them back, and it's sort of becoming, as far as I'm concerned, too many regalos under the old tree for what they really meant. And they're symbolic, of course, gifts that were given at another time in another place.
Well, that's, yeah, and that's one of the fascinating thing, parts of that whole story. The Magi appear in Matthew and not Luke. The account in Luke never specifies how many Magi there are. People just over the centuries decided there were three wise men because there were three gifts: gold and frankincense and myrrh.
And don't forget, as I used to say irreverently, and got booted out of the house almost time when I was a kid, an equipment sampler.
Oh, you know,
I knew you'd love that one.
Absolutely. I'll probably need to pick one of those up for Agnes tomorrow on the way over.
Oh, Lord. That's
there's a holiday tradition for you. When I was a little boy growing up, Jim, you know, the Whitman sampler always came with a map, so you knew what was what.
Right.
But there were other boxes of chocolates that would not come with a map, and so it was anybody's guess. And so my oldest sister was rather persnickety about which candies she would and would not eat. And so it was not at all unusual to reach for a piece of chocolate in the box, pick it up, and find out that there was a thumbnail gouge in the bottom of it.
Well,
from the attempt to discern whether or not it was a piece of candy she wanted to eat or not, and if it was still there and it had the gouge in it, you could bet that she had passed on it.
Well, I hope so. Speaking of passing on it, I'd be thankful that nobody put any X-Lax in it.
Oh, dear God. Jack, writing from Shreveport, Jim, says, under the subject line, casseroles. When I hear casseroles, I hear can of Campbell's mushroom soup.
No, it's a little more to them than that.
But, Campbell's cream of celery, Campbell's mushroom, and there's a couple of other ones, cream of onion, that are almost like the philosopher's stone of throwing together a quick casserole.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, you try to, number one, you lay your broccoli or place your broccoli at the bottom of the pan, and then you whip up your mushrooms, a cream of mushroom soup, and I always thought that, you know, food should have some type of consistency to it and just not be like mush. So I load mine with almonds and stuff like that.
Oh, that sounds yummy. Oh, I love slivered almonds that are baked in things.
Absolutely.
Hey, did you look up Rosalind Carter's Plains cheese ring like we talked about, Jim?
You know, I haven't been able to because there have been some ongoing things with me personally that have just, I guess, kept my mind on other things, but I still have it in the back of my mind. And, you know, I've just sort of tried to, as best I can on this holiday, fill my mental storage tanks with, you know, some happy things.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you know, kitty cats are... Just got an email from a good friend of mine with RCAR, the Raleigh County for Animal. Their no-kill shelter that she's going to bring over to the kids some gifts and stuff like that. She's a wonderful lady. Miss Patty Mertz, she is a truly wonderful human being. And she and I have worked together for years and years and years to give our fortunate four-legged friends, the ones that we can catch and bring back into some semblance of thing of humanity, a decent life for them. I just happened to catch on one of the Facebook things people who had thrown a dog still living onto a, what do you call those things, a trash heap or whatever you call
it. Oh, God.
And that's where the vets placed him. Nonetheless, the dog was rescued. And I thought to myself, how anybody could be so heartless and inhumane as to place a sick animal in a landfill. I thought to myself, there must be in the 13th circle of hell a place for them.
Yeah, down there with the, down there, what did Dante say, with the betrayers?
Oh, I don't know. I think the betrayers probably would be in bad company with somebody who'd do something like that. That's just my personal opinion, but nonetheless.
Yeah. Well, Jim, I hope you enjoy. I hope you enjoy your repast, and we will talk soon. I hope you have a happy holiday. And the same to all of those about whom you care.
Well, same thing to you. I think the most delightful thing I've seen on TV this year, as far as visual pablum is concerned, is the Sound of Music. And I thought about you.
Oh, you mean the live version?
I mean the one done in 1965.
Oh, okay. The what I like to refer to as the real version.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Well, NBC put up a live version, you know, live as in live on, you know, as you watched, it was being done live. A couple of weeks ago.
I didn't see that, but nonetheless.
I think it featured Carrie Underwood in the Julie Andrews role, which made me not want to watch it.
I missed that, but, you know, nonetheless.
I don't think you missed much, Jim.
No, but when it opens up in the 1965 version, you know, the hills were alive with the sound of music. I thought to myself, how nice that would be true, particularly around here, instead of the sounds of blasting and stuff of that nature.
Yeah, I imagine you're closer than I am. There have been some real window rattlers lately.
Oh, I haven't heard any of those, but nonetheless, I know you've got your son on tonight with his guitar, and I hope he does well. I'm sure he will.
I know he will.
But if you can just at least squeeze in the thing I sent you an email about last night.
We will see what happens with the clock.
Well, you still, well, guys, say 25.
Yeah.
Where's time flown?
See? Yeah. You get a sense for what it's like around here. Jim, thanks a lot and Merry Christmas.
Same to you and Happy New Year.
All right. Thank you. We'll talk soon.
Bye.
Bye. And before we move into the final phase of the evening, we'll go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you? This is actually Steve calling from New York.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm okay. Kind of an odd Christmas this year. You know, all of my whining and whatnot that I've in my emails I've sent. And to top it all off, my partner wasn't able to come down from Canada, so I'm. It's just me. Yeah, it sucks, but it's just me this year. But I got my two little four-legged friends keeping me company as they. Surprise, surprise, sleep on the bed. But, you know,
Are they of the feline or the canine variety?
Feline.
Okay.
Feline. And both rescues. So Jim and I share a bit of an affinity about the whole getting them from shelters. Both of them, I know one of them was on the, here in New York, they have... understandably, it's a rather large problem with strays and whatnot, and one of them, they got her in a stairwell. She was only 7 weeks old, and she was slated to be euthanized that night, and I went and pulled her off the euthanized list. And the other one, he has a rather sordid history of abuse and being in a, he was a feral cat, I guess, at one time. He was in a fire and blah, 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 so. But, you know, hopefully I've given them good homes for the past year and a half to 2 years. But they'll be joining me. But I wanted to call in, this whole Duck Dynasty thing, I hate the fact that I give the guy give the whole thing any kind of attention, but it just seems...
Yeah, it makes you want to shower with bleach, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Palin, who, and her ilk, and you know, I just say as a side, very few people can I just completely not stand, that I can't stand to listen to, I can't stand to see, I can't stand to hear even talked about. But she's on that list because, you know, if she were a much less attractive, frumpy, you know, little bit overweight woman with some bad hair and bad skin, no one would want anything to do with her. She's nothing but porn for the kind of religious right men, and probably to a certain extent women. But she keeps this in the news, and I, every time I hear this, I feel the need to again clarify, and probably in all honesty to this audience, it doesn't need clarification, but for anybody who might not quite understand why it's not a free speech issue, anytime I can tell somebody why it's not a free speech issue, I kind of choose to do so.
Well, the fact, Steve, that so many people say that it is, tells you that there has been a profound failing in civic instruction in this country, does it not?
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting. I'm not that old, but I really see a huge difference of young people coming out of high school and college throwing the terms freedom of speech all over the place when, you know, this is something I posted on your Facebook page about, I think what it ultimately comes down to is you have a group of people, and I frankly think it's mostly on the right, they don't want to have to be responsible for anything they say.
More than that, Steve, they want some kind of cover in order to continually manifest their own bigotry, hatreds, and prejudices.
Bingo.
And they want to insist that we coddle them in that.
Right. I get so sick of hearing, well, I'm not politically correct, and
You know what that means? I'm not politically correct. What that means is, when nobody who would object is listening, they use the N word and the F word.
Absolutely.
And you know, it's like flying the Confederate flag and saying that you're manifesting your freedom. No, you're manifesting hate.
I am ready to go out and stand in front of Fox News with a nice sign asking when Sarah Palin is going to stone her daughter to death for having her daughter having a child out of wedlock,
or for wearing garments woven from two separate fibers,
or for working on the Sabbath.
And for all I know, they've probably also eaten goat boiled in its own milk
and cheeseburgers.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's me. I don't know. I literally, when I hear people talk, and I guess there are people who honestly believe that somehow the fact that a guy got suspended off a TV program somehow means that's some sort of persecution. I can't.
Yeah, but even that, Steve, is a hustle. The show was on hiatus. It was not in the middle of its production schedule. They were all just, how do you suspend somebody from doing nothing?
Right. But the bigger issue is it's not just that show. It's this quote-unquote war on Christmas, or the fact that somebody on the State House wants to put a Festivus poll. How the fact that they don't get exclusive use of the public arena, you know, means that they're being, I just used the word, I can't remember the word, oppressed, or it's just, and when I hear people saying that, my God, you know, it's the world Christmas, I walk down 34th Street and look at the Macy's Christmas windows and the Macy's Christmas decoration and the fact that there's a huge Christmas tree in Rockefeller Center, there's a huge national Christmas tree, and there's a Christmas tree at the Cap, and I feel like saying, you're right. It's just people are being completely restrained from showing anything about Christmas. I honestly don't get it, and I can't figure out is it a money hustle? Is it?
For some, it is. I mean, consider part of the reason that Godzilla from Wasilla is trying to be so visible in this and sort of glomming on and bogarting on every controversy coming down the pike is because she's got a book to move.
Okay. I was just going to say, is there a book involved
yeah.
here?
And you know, for somebody who's a Bible-believing Christian with a personal relationship with her Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, you know, Fundy, it's interesting that even in the title of her book, she got it wrong. The title of her stupid book is Glad Tidings and Great Joy. Now, run right over to the second chapter of the book of Luke, Steve, and you will find that what the angels bring are glad tidings of great joy.
Oh, great joy.
Of course, that's right up there with one of my other... That's one of my other the peeves, is the mistranslation, and it really is. It's a straight-up mistranslation of what the angels declare. Because we, you know, peace on earth, goodwill toward men. It all sounds good until you start thinking about it for a minute. Because why would you wish goodwill to bad people? I mean, apart from the whole Jesus message that comes along later that you got to love your enemy, which Socrates first enunciated. But it's actually a straight-up mistranslation from the earliest forms that happened when it got translated into Latin and then mistranslated into various other language. It is peace on earth to men of goodwill. And there's a big difference between the two.
That's a really, really huge.
you can pretty much drive a barge through the difference in meaning between those two.
Right. And, you know, the other thing, too, is, look, I've written to you about this. I guess I would pass for what is a, I hate the word devout, but I'll use it because I don't know of any, a Catholic. I go to Mass on Sundays. But, you know, and from very, very early on, and I didn't grow up in a Catholic family, but very early on, I felt very uneasy about talking about my Lord and Savior. I began to wonder, is it something I'm quote unquote ashamed of, or, you know, and then I guess the more I thought about it, the more I look at it as, that's not the issue. The issue is, it's a personal thing, and it's funny, I probably learned more from Bible about the Bible listening to Malloy than almost anybody else is. And the notion of, and I don't want this to stop be a, end up being a religious show, but some of this stuff I think.
Well, it's Christmas.
Yeah, but also these are words that we need to be able to put in the right winger space and say, well, wait a second. If you're so intent on believing your book, what about this stuff over here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the notion of, you know, you don't pray in public.
It's a simple contradiction in terms. It's a simple dichotomy. If they're, you know, because they're forever braying about their close personal relationship with their Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and yet at the same time, if it's a personal relationship, then why are you braying about it in public?
Right.
How personal is that? That's not a personal relationship. That's marketing.
Yeah. You know,
I'm sorry, I'm howling a little
bit.
I apologize.
You're absolutely right. I have a very good friend of mine who was in the seminary years and years and years ago as a Franciscan. He ended up leaving, but he told me a quotation that Saint Francis said was, "Preach often, only use words when necessary," and it seems to me that a person who, and you know, and I'll, as another side note, I don't identify myself as Christian, because I don't want to be, I identify myself as, and thanks to you, a follower of the Palestinian day labor itinerant rabbi, named Jesus of Nazareth. In any event, it always struck me that, you know, what the value lay, and, you know, this comes right from the Bible as well, is it lay in what you do, not in what you say. So it seems to me that let what you do your preaching for you. Shut your mouth.
You mean faith without works is dead?
Yeah, that part too. And, you know, and I'm always quick to point out to people, the only judgment scene in any of the Gospels has to do with what people did. It had nothing to do. There's no question about, well, what did you believe, or how did you believe, or who did you believe. It was, what did you do?
Well, and that's, and again, there's so much. I would say easily probably 90% of Christians have no clue about what their book says. And one of those is the fact that the book of James is a direct, intentional refutation written by the Jerusalem Jesus cult of the Jesus cult that Paul was trying to establish in the wider Mediterranean world. Because the Pauline letters are all about having faith and you know, the miracle of the cross. And James says, you know, get off your butts, onto your feet, and into the street. And not in terms of forcing people to believe, but going out and leading Christ-like lives. Which interestingly, it's got a whole lot of people in a genuine kerfuffle. Interestingly, is what Pope Frank is talking about these days.
I just, if for no other reason, I love seeing the right wing just in a tizzy, and who
they are cute guy? When they are cute when they tizzy, Steve.
It's just, you know, and it's just it's whether it's Mr. Obama, whom I unfortunately hate to say I can't stand him, but I can't listen to him. I can't look at him anymore.
Oh, it's okay. You can say that. I gave up on him.
I don't see the nefariousness in him that I saw in the Cheney Bush administration. And I do acknowledge that there's a certain amount of, I think that Obama is smart enough to know, and this is where I kind of give him a little bit of a pass. He's smart enough to know that, and we'll call him a black man for now, even though he has a white family and that's who raised him. He's smart enough to know that there are certain things that a black man just can't do.
Nope, can't get angry.
He can't get angry.
I don't know if you've seen it. I referenced it one evening. I think I even played a portion of it. The Key and Peele skit about his angry Obama. This country would be manifestly better if that guy was around him.
Right.
Not just anger for anger's sake, but because once in a while somebody really does need to point out the fact that the Mitch McConnells and the John Boners and the Rand Pauls and the Marco Rubios and the Ted Cruzes and the Steve Kings and the Steve Stockmans and the Louis Gohmerts and that they really are crazier than shithouse rats. And sometimes, you know, Harry Truman at least spoke plainly. And we need a little bit more of, you know, and you had the cup of coffee in law school too. We need a little bit more of that plain language.
Yes. Yes.
Well, Steve, I hate to do it, but I've got to ring off here. I want to get one more call in and then do the tradition thing.
Yes. A very Merry Christmas to you, to your family, to the entire Horn commune, whom I've relied very much on low these past few months to get me through.
Thank you, Steve, and thanks for your notes, and I look forward to hearing from you more in 2014. And I hope, I trust that things will get better.
Yes, I trust that they will, too. Best to you, Bob.
All right. Take care, Steve. Bye now. calling from New York, our buddy Steve, and one more call, and then tradition time. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Roger in Minneapolis.
Hey, Roger, how are you?
Well, I'm plugging away. I'm pleased to get to participate this evening. I'm going through some pretty tough times in my life, any sense of community that I can find is deeply welcomed. And I thought I might chime in for the second time tonight and see if I got on.
You're absolutely welcome. I'm glad you did get through, because there is a real sense of community here, and I think it's what gives value to this whole effort.
Well, yes, I know that. I sense it. Wanted to briefly mention a wish of Merry Christmas Hanukkah Kwanzaa Solstice, but it's really the flying spaghetti monster that we worship.
Absolutely.
Or know that we shouldn't worship to you.
And I thank you for it, Roger. I really do.
Really, you know, the thing that I had in mind in calling was to reflect on what it is that motivates us as thinking people to keep the spirit of what has become encrusted with something called Christmas, and keep it nonetheless, be we atheist or otherwise. Many people feel motivated to do so, and it seems to be something really primal. I know that myself, I've been an atheist most of my life, but I still love the traditions in some regards of this season. I now call it the solstice and feel that that's what it is.
We are herd animals. We are tribal animals.
Mm-hmm.
This is the beyond any doubt whatsoever. This is the crappiest part of the year, at least in the northern hemisphere, where this whole where a great deal of this took root. Although to be fair, you know, I got a lovely Google Earth image from Robert in Australia a little bit ago, talking about Sydney Christmas traditions. They've got a thing called Carols in the Domain, and he said it's been an annual event since 1982 in Australia. 30 years makes it a tradition. A big free concert held the last Saturday before Christmas Day in the Domain, which was a large park to the east of the Sydney CBD, until it was cut in half for a highway. He says it's a great family event. The adults sit around on picnic blankets eating and drinking, and the kids run around playing until the show starts around sunset. He said it's become so popular that the organizers are now considering having it on both the Saturday and the Sunday before Christmas. The crowds that attend now are that big. Christmas carols, and he says you can look up Christmas in the Domain on YouTube if anybody wants to see how Sydney people celebrate Christmas. And, you know, those are largely, it's something that got carried around the world as a function of colonialism. The Hawaiian phrase that Obama used the other day was Mele Kalikimaka. That is Merry Christmas within the dialect of people who were trying to speak English words with the linguistic skills that they had. I think Tim from L.A. said Christmas in Japanese is just Krizumazu, I think.
These are
tribal things, and they go back to the fact that it's a crappy time of year in the northern hemisphere. The light is at its least. Human beings have never done well in the darkness anyway, so it's a reason to sort of band together and reaffirm our commitments and connections to one another.
Bob, let me jump in here and add a funny little perspective. You know the tarot card where there's the pauper looking through the glowing window at the joys of some kind of family feast and celebration amid a kind of desolate winter setting. Do you know that? Do you know what that tarot card looks like?
Yes.
It's from the Aleister Crowley deck. Well, I don't put much stock in that system, but the fact is that this is also this is something that I want to just bring to people's hearts. A very painful time for those who do not have community.
Yes.
And myself, I find myself teetering on the incredible abyss of my beautiful three daughters and my wife. My wife has decided to explode our precious marriage.
Oh, I'm so
and
sorry.
I find myself largely abandoned emotionally. There's much to describe about that, but to leave it simple, my heart has brought me to tears a few times today. I am a person of ever rallying joyfulness and optimism, but I do know what it's like to be the person looking through the window at the glow of somebody else's happiness. And I guess I would just urge everybody who has an opportunity to reach out to the hearts of those who are more lonely than they to try to offer some love.
A better sentiment could not be expressed on this evening, Roger, than you have just expressed, and I thank you very much for it.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. I hope we'll talk again soon.
Oh, we surely will.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Sweet and decently and goodly said. Roger, calling from the Twin Cities. Thanks going out to Jay, who just kicked in another $50 for fundraising purposes this evening. That means we've raised $105 this evening, which is wonderful. He says, all the best to you and yours and everyone listening to the horn around the world. Indeed. Thank you. So it's 10 minutes before the hour, a little time to work in some tradition here. I'm going to call Ferg up for the reading. Now just scoot your chair up. You don't have to stand up.
I do stand up.
And he wants to direct.
You can't tell me how to live my life. I'm just kidding, everyone. He tells me how to live my life, and he does it right. That's why I'm still alive.
Okay, so, you know, like that, right? Just start there. Verse 19, all the way to verse 19. Get a little background music going here. The Christmas Story, as read by the last remaining member of the Kincaid clan, still under this roof. In other words, Ferg.
And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you, ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of heavenly hosts praising God, and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, Let us now go, even unto Bethlehem, and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste, and found Mary and Joseph, and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart.
Thank you, Ferd.
Yep.
And now let's reach over there and grab that. No, I don't care if you don't want to. We already build it. And so, okay, well, all right. So, just a little medley, okay? I hope that thing's turned off.
It is.
Okay. All right, stand by.
Nobody's calling me. Go.
That's Ferg, the one and only. So we'll wrap it up for this evening. And like I said, the schedule's kind of in flux. I don't know. Maybe here on the 26th, may not be. Maybe here on the 27th, may not be. I'll try to tweet and Facebook just to let folks know one way or the other. So, again, and yeah, big kudos in the chat room, Ferg. You can see that there. See? Go, Ferg.
Thank you, all. This is my last Christmas as a child. I'm glad that I get to spend it doing this.
It works better when you talk into the microphone. This is not a...
I'm sorry.
It's okay. So we'll roll out of here with the usual thanks, but special thanks, given the holiday season, to everybody who makes all of this happen. The all-volunteer staff, you with your calls and your emails and your tweets and your Facebook posts and your kind contributions to keep all of this going. Thank you. And whatever it is you celebrate this time of year, our sincere wish and hope that it has been joyous and good for you. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Season's greetings. And we will talk very soon.
He Let's get drunk on apple wine. Me, I'll be just fine and dandy. Lord, it's like a hard candy Christmas. I'm barely getting through tomorrow, but still I won't let sorrow bring me way down. I'll be fine and dandy. Lord, it's like a hard candy Christmas. I'm barely getting through tomorrow, but still I won't let sorrow bring me way down. Maybe I'll just lie low.